these two people, you know, became some of the most prominent representatives of what press freedom means.
Myanmar frees two Reuters journalists. It's Wednesday, May 8th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Look for us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, global markets fall as trade talks near. A medicinal cure is discovered. Thailand's Cave Boys, soon to be a movie. Beneficial hippo dung and an environmental alarm. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Two Reuters journalists are back with their families and colleagues after being released from prison in Myanmar, after President Win Myint issued a blanket pardon for thousands of prisoners. Walone and Cho So-woo had been sentenced to 7 years in jail for breaking the Official Secrets Act. The pair was investigating the massacre of 10 Rohingya by police and soldiers in the village of Indin at the time of their arrest in 2017. Their colleagues watched and cheered as Walone and Cho So-woo walked free Tuesday. Walone spoke to reporters.
We're really happy and excited to see our families and colleagues. And I don't know what to say. We're very excited.
Their long-awaited reunion with the families comes just 2 weeks after Myanmar's Supreme Court rejected an appeal of their convictions. At one point in their trial, a law enforcement official testified he planted documents on the two men. VOA Asia's Ira Melman reached the Deputy Asia Director at Human Rights Watch. He spoke with Phil Robertson via Skype from Kuala Lumpur, asking Robertson why the decision to free the two reporters was made now.
Well, the real reason was international pressure. The people at Reuters had done a very, very effective campaign to bring this to the leaders of the world. These two journalists won the Pulitzer Prize for the actual story that they wrote that the Burmese military didn't like. I mean, it's quite clear that this is a situation where these two people became some of the most prominent representatives of what press freedom means, not only in Southeast Asia, but also the world. I mean, they had become a cause célèbre. The government put them all the way through their actual legal system, even though quite clearly they never should have been arrested in the first place, much less prosecuted. And ultimately, you know, having kept them in prison for 500 days, decided they were going to cut their losses. And they've let them go now. And we welcome that. We welcome that they're now home with their families and ultimately will be able to go back to their newsrooms. But it's quite clear that they did nothing wrong here. This is all about the government and the military trying to persecute critics who dare report stories that they don't like.
And I take it you think that the fact that they were released does not change the government's outlook on that.
No, not at all. And ultimately, the government would probably say that justice was served, rule of law was carried out, all that. And the reality is that when you have someone who appeared on the stand in the court, a policeman, a senior officer who said as a prosecuting witness that, in fact, you know, I was ordered by my superior to set these people up, and the court still convicted them. You know, just shows how, the lack of real judicial independence we see in Myanmar.
We have just observed Press Freedom Day. I don't know if that had anything specifically to do with it, but how big of a problem? Obviously, it's a problem. But as far as Asia is concerned, how big of a problem and where?
Well, I mean, in Myanmar, we have well over 30 journalists who are still in prison or facing charges. And we're getting more every day. We just had a group of journalists in Sitwe charged under the Unlawful Associations Act, which is another colonial law from the British era, just like the Official Secrets Act that these two are charged under. We have people who have been charged under 66D of the Telecommunications Act. We have people being charged under a provision of the penal code that says that you can't say anything bad about the military. I mean, it goes on and on and on. What we're seeing is the military and the civilian government led by Aung San Suu Kyi both playing a role in trying to shut down critical reporting in Myanmar. If we go beyond Myanmar in places like obviously Vietnam and Laos, that's not free. That's controlled by the governments. But even places like Singapore. Singapore is about to pass an anti-fake news law that is going to allow a minister to arbitrarily determine what is false and what is misleading news. And that has extraterritorial ramifications connected to anything discussed about Singapore anywhere in the world. So quite clearly, Southeast Asia is leading a spiral to the bottom when we talk about press freedom.
What is it going to take, if it is possible at all, to turn this around?
Well, it's going to take the actions by the United Nations, supported by key member governments, like the United States, the European Union, its member states, Canada, other countries in Latin America, where press freedom is respected. There has to be a new sort of crescendo of criticism against these governments that are systematically targeting and taking out journalists.
Now, this is not just Southeast Asia. This is this seems to be, and I guess you would agree, a worldwide phenomenon, right, of clamping down on press freedom?
Well, I think so, and this is a reaction by governments. I mean, governments in many places were used to controlling not only the print media but also the radio and TV. And all of a sudden, the internet springs up, and they find that there's a lot of leaks in their previously controlled sort of information package as people self-publish and news websites come up and people start talking about things that the governments don't want them to talk about. So this is the government striking back, and, you know, we see this in Vietnam going after bloggers. We see this in places like Thailand where the military government has shut down, TV stations and radio stations. We see it in Singapore where people are being sued and basically bankrupted. And now we see it in Myanmar where, you know, a woman, Aung San Suu Kyi, who everybody thought was a saint, turns out to be a real sinner when it comes to violating press freedom.
Has what is happening and has happened in the United States had any effect on press freedom?
Oh, it's had a huge impact. The United States, which used to be an important defender of press freedom, is pretty much sort of gone from the field. I mean, sometimes we get some ambassadors or some embassy staff saying some things. But the reality is that as a matter of U.S. foreign policy, promoting freedom of the press is just not happening anymore. Human rights issues, unfortunately, have been drummed out of U.S. foreign policy by the Trump administration. And every time Donald Trump attacks the press in the United States and calls it fake news, authoritarians around the world cheer.
The United States welcomed Myanmar's decision on Monday to free the reporters so they can return to their families following over 500 days of imprisonment. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wrote on Twitter, "We hope to see the release of other imprisoned journalists and a greater freedom of expression." Reuters editor-in-chief Stephen J. Adler said in a statement, "We are enormously pleased that Myanmar has released our courageous reporters. Since their arrests 511 days ago, they have become symbols of the importance of press freedom around the world. We welcome their return." A special United Nations investigative panel has accused Myanmar's military of carrying out numerous atrocities during the 2017 crackdown against the Rohingya Muslims with genocidal intent. The UN panel is calling for the prosecution of its top generals, including the Army's commander-in-chief of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you go online and visit voanews.com. Myanmar sets Reuters reporters free. Top Chinese economic official to travel to United States for new round of trade talks. Official Thai election results favor anti-military party. Too many jobs, too few qualified workers are economic obstacles in Vietnam. K-pop stardom lures Japanese youth to Korea despite diplomatic chill. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories, photos, and videos, too, when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Global markets have been volatile after President Donald Trump threatened Sunday to raise tariffs on China. Although Beijing has indicated it will continue trade negotiations scheduled this Wednesday in Washington, the escalating tension between the two powers may have an impact beyond trade, as the Trump administration needs Beijing's support on various issues, including dealing with North Korea and Iran. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has this report.
After U.S. trade officials met with their Chinese counterparts in Beijing last week, Chinese officials say a delegation still plans to travel to Washington to continue talks on Wednesday, despite President Donald Trump's threat to raise tariffs.
As far as the Sino-U.S. economic and trade negotiations are concerned, we all know that 10 rounds of talks have been conducted and positive progress has been made.
On Sunday, Trump tweeted that by Friday, he would raise import taxes from 10% to 25% on $200 billion in Chinese products. Washington is already charging 25% duty on an additional $50 billion of Chinese imports, while Beijing has imposed penalties on $110 billion of American goods.
I think the president is a little bit frustrated that it's taken a while to get a deal. He's trying to get the best possible deal. And I think he's also playing to his base. He wants people to see that he's being tough on China, so that if there is a deal this week, then he's going to be able to say, I got the best deal possible. I was really tough on them.
Trump's tweet appeared to have triggered volatility in global markets, with investors already jittery about the ongoing U.S.-China trade war. There are concerns Trump's rhetoric will jeopardize negotiations.
And if they do come to a negotiated agreement by the end of that period, they have to contend with a domestic audience in China that would view this as a capitulation to the United States. Every country has its politics. China, of course, is no exception.
Both countries have economic incentives to reach a deal so that the two leaders could meet again for a signing ceremony in the coming months, as has been speculated. While the two sides insist they are not using trade negotiations as leverage for other issues, for the Trump administration, the incentive goes beyond trade.
Not only is the United States looking to China to help with DPRK, but the U.S. is also asking China to cut back on its purchases of Iranian oil in an effort to squeeze the Iranian regime. So there are other issues where the United States needs China's help, and I think that definitely affects the trade talks.
On Sunday, North Korean state media showed its leader Kim Jong-un overseeing its first ballistic missile test in a year and a half. The test of the short-range missile came 2 months after denuclearization talks between the U.S. and North Korea collapsed in Hanoi. Washington's maximum pressure strategy towards Pyongyang, which includes tough sanctions, partly depends on Beijing as North Korea's main ally and sponsor. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News at the White House.
This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's Attorney General says former Goldman Sachs executive Roger Ng has been temporarily extradited to the United States to face criminal charges linked to the alleged multi-billion dollar ransacking of state investment fund 1MDB. He was arrested in November, charged both in the U.S. and Malaysia. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A potential antidote to a potentially lethal box jellyfish sting has been discovered by Australian researchers. From Sydney, Phil Mercer shares the news.
The box jellyfish carries enough venom to kill more than 60 people. It's one of the most dangerous marine animals in Australia's waters. Its tentacles have millions of stinging cells. Each one contains a tiny harpoon connected to a venom-filled bulb. The pain they inflict is excruciating and causes skin to die. If the dose of venom is large enough, it can lead to cardiac arrest and death within minutes. Scientists in Sydney have used genome editing, where DNA is manipulated to find a molecular antidote that blocks the symptoms of a sting if applied within 15 minutes. Associate Professor Greg Neely says there have been successful trials on rodents.
That was the eureka moment, is that this is actually could work as an antidote, and it's also safe.
Well, the drug is already known to be safe in humans, so now we just have to basically show efficacy for jellyfish venom. So it could be quickly, within a year or two.
Scientists believe the drug will stop skin dying and the intense pain when applied, but they don't know yet if it will prevent a heart attack. The research has been published in the science journal Nature Communications. However, the Australian Marine Stinger Advisory Service said there was a risk the new therapy could stimulate the stinging cells and cause them to inject more venom into the body and potentially trigger a heart attack. It believes the preferred first treatment for jellyfish stings is vinegar. Box jellyfish are also found in Indonesia, Thailand, parts of Africa, and the Gulf of Mexico. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, take an Uber to the new Thailand Cave Boys movie. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Thailand's Election Commission has officially endorsed results from the country's March 24th general election, declaring the Phu Thai Party, associated with fugitive former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat, topped the field by winning 136 constituencies. It's not clear who will form the next government. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, ride-sharing giant Uber is about to go public, while a Thai boys soccer team has come out of a cave and into a movie. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Uber Technologies, the world's largest ride-hailing company, plans an initial public offering between $80 billion and $91 billion, which values the company as much as one-third below what the startup insiders had hoped for. Uber exited Southeast Asia last year, selling its local business to Grab. It now uses Singapore as its headquarters for Asia Pacific, where it has 9 markets, including in Japan, Korea, and Australia. Despite its hold in Asia, Uber's market presence hasn't been as strong as in the United States, where it has managed to garner 70% of the ride-sharing market. Uber's lower-than-expected valuation reflects the poor stock performance of its smaller rival, Lyft, following its IPO last month. Lyft shares ended trading lower than expected from its IPO price amid investor skepticism over the company's path to profitability. Despite the skepticism following Lyft's rocky IPO, it didn't take long for Uber to get up enough demand for all of its 180 million shares, and some investors still stand to make huge gains worth millions of dollars. A new production deal about last July's dramatic rescue of 12 boys and their soccer coach from a flooded cave in Thailand has just been signed. Netflix has teamed up with the makers of the Crazy Rich Asians film to tell the dramatic story, which will be made into either a miniseries or a film. Erica North is a Netflix representative.
We at Netflix believe that great stories travel. There is a universality to storytelling, and this incredible tale is certainly no exception. We are more than delighted to be partnering in Thailand with wonderful creative teams to bring this story to light.
The 12 boys and their coach became trapped in a flooded Tham Luang cave in northern Thailand during the monsoon season on June 23rd last year. Netflix and SK Global Entertainment say they acquired the rights to the story from the recently created Thai production company, 13 Tum Luang Company, which is presided over by the team's soccer coach. Since the dramatic saga came to an end, the boys, several of them from poor and marginalized ethnic hill tribes, have been reveling in invites from the likes of professional football clubs and TV shows like Ellen DeGeneres. No financial details on this latest production deal have been given yet. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
Happening now in Asia, China says its negotiators are preparing to travel to the United States for their next round of trade talks this week, even after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened higher tariffs on billions of dollars of Chinese goods after he complained the process is taking too long. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, scientists are sounding a loud alarm that much of the natural world is at risk, as we hear VOA's Rick Pantaleo take a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, or IPBES, a United Nations-related organization, recently released a comprehensive report that paints a dire portrait of the current and future state of nature. Called the IPBES Global Assessment, the report warns that the health of the world's ecosystems is deteriorating at rates that are unparalleled in human history. The report goes on to say that 1 million animal and plant species are under threat of extinction, many within decades. IPBES Chair Sir Robert Watson said that we are eroding the very foundations of our economies and the quality of life worldwide. He also pointed out that the global assessment also shows that it's not too late to make a difference, but only if transformative efforts begin now and at every level from local to global. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
There is some good news, at least in one part of the world, where rivers and lakes are being rejuvenated by hippos. Scientists say the animals' nutrient-rich dung makes them vital to the health of the aquatic ecosystem, but the researchers also warn that the dwindling hippo population could prove harmful to those waterways. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to Kenya, where the scientists did their latest research.
Here at Kenya's Masai Mara Park, the dung from these hippos is actually revitalizing the Mara River and downstream Lake Victoria, Africa's largest lake. The researchers are taking water and soil samples in the park to get samples of the dung and river water.
The hippos have been around Africa and this particular river for millions of years, so the ecosystem is really adapted to it and knows how to deal with this dung coming into your river to such a point that it's now actually vital for the river. The fish, for instance, that live in the river, they have adapted to use this dung, for instance, as a food source.
The mammals are protected in the park, but outside the preserves, hippo populations are down due to poaching and loss of habitat.
At night, it lives on land and it grazes the grass of the savannah. And during the daytime, it rests in rivers and lakes where it's safe from predators.
Every day, hippos eat up to 25 kilos of savanna grass, which contains silica. The natural organic substance is transported into waterways through the hippo dung, which helps the environment by offsetting nitrogen and phosphorus runoff from farms. Silica is also crucial to the health of diatoms, tiny algae which play an important role in the ecosystem. These single-cell organisms turn sunlight into energy through photosynthesis, and are a key source of food for other creatures.
Now, when there becomes an imbalance between nitrogen, phosphorus, and silica, then other algae take over the competition between the diatoms and the other algae, and then we lose the diatoms as a dominant species, and then we lose also the functions these diatoms have in the ecosystem.
The study showed that more than three-quarters of the silica, which ends up in the Mara River, came from hippos, helping keep the food chain in balance. Deborah Block, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. In addition to all of the digital choices you have to hear our program, like iTunes and SoundCloud, VOA Asia, Facebook, and of course our website, voanews.com, there's another choice you have. Hear us on the radio. Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines carries our program. We'd like to say hello and thank you to everyone there who is listening today. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a super day.